Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I'm Kurt Helin, managing editor of the NBA page at NBC Sports, with you as always. And today, this is actually kicking off our, or tipping off, I suppose, since this is basketball, our NBA preview series. And what better team to start with than the Golden State Warriors, the team that for the last 5 years has been a dominant force in the NBA, the gold standard everybody was trying to reach. Now they're probably taking half a step back, but people may be counting them out. It's an interesting transition for them. And so let's bring in Logan Murdock from NBC Sports Bay Area to talk about all things Warriors heading into the season. How you doing, Logan?
I'm doing good, man. You're in Los Angeles, I believe, but in the Bay Area, we're having a bit of a heat wave. It's like 80 degrees. I know that's like a Tuesday for you guys, but we're going crazy up here. It's really hot. It's supposed to be like 90. So trying to figure out things, trying to get cool out here.
All right, let's piss off the rest of the country right here. This is like a California thing, right? Though, like,
yeah.
There's a heat wave end of September, and then again somewhere before Halloween, we're going to get another really hot spell, and it's like going to just kill plants.
Wave, we mean like 85 degrees or like 90.
Yeah, it's going to get to 85 or 90 here. Yeah, same here. It'll be hot enough that you're annoyed it's not fall, because you'll be like watching a football game on Saturday in South Bend and think, oh, look at the leaves are changing. I bet everybody gets to wear sweaters. And none of that. So yeah, the challenges we live with here in California.
Yeah. I love being a coastal elitist, though. Like, I do like that. I do like feigning really, like, oh my God, it's so hot. It's 75. Oh man. I love doing that to all my people back east and down south. So I'm sure this will piss people off.
Exactly. Exactly. And they get me back because, you know, here's an easy one. All-star games in Chicago this year. I don't own clothes for Chicago in February. I simply do not have those kind of clothes. So
I have a hoodie. That works.
Yeah, exactly. My brother bought me one jacket once that I can kind of, it's like, if you go to All-Star weekend, I'm going to have this one pea coat jacket on all weekend, hoping that it fits in every occasion. So, all right.
We're in Minnesota January 2nd. I don't know how I'm going to deal with that. I don't know what I'm going to do.
I will say this about Minneapolis, on top of the fact that the food scene there is underrated.
Very underrated.
It does have and Toronto's this way too. It's got the whole Habit Trail underground. You can get a lot of places without having to go up. So
I'm going to look into that. I haven't been there in the wintertime. I'm going to look into that. I'm going to tap in about that. Yeah. Ask some questions.
It helps. So we can move off of weather talk onto, you know, something just as exciting. Actually, one of the biggest changes for the Warriors this season, outside of all the stuff on the court, is they move into the Chase Center. They move back into the city. Have you seen the new building yet?
It's funny. I haven't seen it completed yet. I was there in March when I was tagging along with Draymond Green for one of his appearances when it was still under the construction. I have not been there. Actually, when they had the media, when I was on a flight to Mexico for vacation. So I did not make it to there. So I think media day is going to be the first time I'm there inside when it's fully done. But it's weird saying that, you know, when I have my friends around the media, when they're like, oh, we're going to come to the Bay. We're going to come to San Francisco now. Yeah. Like, it's going to be, the game is in San Francisco. And it's weird to say that now, where you're always, my whole life it's been, because I'm from out here. You know, we're going to Oakland. We're going to the Coliseum for a game. And now to say, oh, I'm going to San Francisco to watch a basketball game, a professional basketball game, is pretty weird. So it's going to take some getting used to. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm curious how the vibe changes a little bit, because I think part of what was fun about going to Warriors games was, A, that Oakland's just kind of a gritty, fun city. And, you know, you had Gary Payton and Damian Lillard and guys from there that had a history, but also, like, I think that vibe carried over a little bit into the arena. I mean, that's a loud arena. That is a fans were close, old school, passionate kind of arena. And I'm curious how that goes at Staples Center or at Chase, if it's more like Staples Center, where like the people in the lower bowl have their phones out and are less, you know, are less concerned with the game. Like, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think that the biggest comparison is going to be is because I'm from Oakland. I grew up a Raiders fan, and Raider fans was very different going to Raider games than it was going to San Francisco 49er games. And, you know, you had your wine and cheese crowd at the Niner games and things like that, and you didn't have that in Oakland. And it was a lot more gritty. And same with the Warriors games. It was a lot more gritty when you came to the Coliseum. And all the things I've heard of Chase Center, is not going to be like that. It's going to be in a lot of ways where the Bay Area is going. They have a suite level that is in the stands that is closed off lower level suites. And people are going to have their own butlers. They're going to have their own stations where they can put their wine bottles. It's going to be I think it's like $50,000 a night. And that's the type of and it's lower level. And that's the type of crowd you're going to get. At least on the onset of the season, throughout these games, and it's going to be a different type of crowd. I don't think it's not going to be loud and just a home court advantage as it was in Oracle. It's just the way the economics works. But it's going to be weird to see this new crowd, and it's kind of like that. I don't think it's just a San Francisco thing. I think that when you see a new arena, you get a different crowd. And I think that we saw that down south in Santa Clara at Levi's Stadium, and I think that that's going to be. It's going to be a bit how it's going to be for the Chase Center, I believe. But you know, we'll see what happens. But it's definitely going to be a change.
I think you're right, too. It's like whether you're talking about Barclays Center in Brooklyn or even the new one in Milwaukee or what have you, it's just the vibe gets different in these new arenas where giving those priority seats to people who can afford them. Now, that's what pays the bills now. The money isn't – the money in I'm going to be a little off on these numbers because I've only talked with people kind of generally about them, but I like the lower bowl and suites account for 70 to 75% of the team's gate revenue now. Like, that's where the money is. So you cater to those people. And then that's, you know, welcome to the modern sports world. That's not just an NBA thing. That's Major League Baseball, NHL, NFL. Like, that's where the money is in those expensive seats. It's not the common fan anymore. Unfortunately, that changes the dynamic a lot. The product on the court is going to be a little bit different this year, too. I mean, obviously, Kevin Durant leaves, but it's kind of weird. I think there was a sense of, oh, hey, Clay's injured, Durant's gone. This team isn't going to be – there was a reaction, they're not going to be that good, and now there's kind of a swing back, like, don't count them out. And I think there's a certain level of just – not only – look, Steph Curry's still really good at basketball, and Draymond Green is there, and Clay theoretically comes back, you know, second – after the All-Star break probably somewhere – but more than that, more than just a talent, there's an institutional belief in them, right? Like, they're just going to succeed in the way we always expect the Spurs to succeed.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. It's funny, though. I know that they have that institution in them, but I don't know if they've earned it to the level of the Spurs, right? I think that this is where they earn it. This is where they earn we're not necessarily supposed to be good this season or as good as we've been, but we still – somehow get 48 wins. This is going to test how good Steve Kerr is, in my opinion, how good he is to do it when he doesn't have as much talent. Because I think we talk about Pop and the Spurs in the sense that, you know, they're always in the mix and they're always in the mix. But I don't necessarily, while they have proven that with championships, I think Pop has also proven his greatness by getting a lot out of teams that probably shouldn't be there, like getting an 8 seed when he probably shouldn't even be there. So I think that's going to be a test. And I think two ways that they're going to be successful will be, one, their health. That's going to be if Steph can play 78 to 80 games and if Draymond can be healthy throughout a season and if Clay can come back healthy. If they can be healthy, they can do good things. And two, and the second thing that's really going to be a telltale sign will be if their defense is going, how their defense is going to be. They don't have Andre Iguodala in there. They're not going to have Clay for extended stretches. And also, Draymond Green during the regular season has not been, over the last two seasons, has not been the elite level defender as we've seen in the playoffs. And we've seen in his Defensive Player of the Year Right. We haven't seen that in the regular season. A lot of that has to do with injuries. A lot of that has to do with this institutional belief that, you know, we have to save ourselves for the playoffs and we have to do that. But not this season. They have to win games and have to try to win games in a way that they haven't over the last maybe 2.5 years.
Well, Draymond wasn't even, to his own admission, wasn't even in the best shape. What did he drop, like 25 pounds? Heading in, starting after January 1st last year, he's like, all right, now I got to get in shape. Now I got to get focused. He did not bring, I know he gets frustrated at that, but he really hasn't brought the same defensive effort. He'll dial it up for stretches or a game here or there, like, big national TV game or something. Suddenly Draymond's Draymond again, but it's not night in, night out. Right. And I think that the other thing I'm really watching, this team has had tremendous continuity over the last few years. And that, with no Iguodala, with no Sean Livingston, obviously Durant, just a lot of that is gone. There's a lot of new faces in there this year. And getting that chemistry back and that everybody buys in belief is going to be, look, that's one of the things on Steve, got to be on Steve Kerr's list.
Yeah, it's a different team. There's 8 new guys on the team. One thing that the Warriors could always go on is they would have their leadership, and their leadership has changed drastically. You got to think that now the elder statesmen are Steph, Clay, and Draymond, and to a certain extent, Kevon Looney. And that's a bit of a deviation from what we've seen over the last few years. If there was any year to have Andre Iguodala, it would be this season, when you have young guys like Jordan Poole, Eric Pascal, even Willie Cauley-Stein, guys that kind of, need a little bit of direction, and they don't have that right now. So that's something that they have to find. They have to find where their leadership lies. They do have the heart and soul of their team, Draymond Green, but you kind of have to have another guy that will offset his rage and, his approach. You're going to have a guy that, will put his arm around you. As well. And I think that's something that they're going to have to figure out, and they're going to miss with Andre.
Yeah. I was going to say the image that always comes back to me for that, and partially because I grew up in LA, but and have covered sports in LA forever. That's what Derek Fisher was for so long for the Lakers. He was the good cop to Kobe's bad cop. You had to have, you had to have the guy who could, after Kobe yelled at somebody, had to go and put his arm, like you said, put his arm around him and go, hey, this is what we're talking about though. Like, calm down. It's okay. Yeah. Here's what we mean. And pump the guy back up a little bit. That was Derek Fisher. He's very great at that. He's, by the way, not a great WNBA coach, it turns out. But
listen, I'm a Sparks fan, and I'm really disappointed in him right now.
Yeah.
I am really disappointed. Shout out Candace Parker. I'm very disappointed in how our season ended this season.
That whole situation, we're not going to go too deep down that rabbit hole, but that whole situation with not playing Candace Parker, but also just the rotation minutes at the end of that game. I mean, I want to say that it was Rachel Nichols used a great analogy. It was somebody that I heard said that this is essentially like Chris Paul. Like, Candace Parker isn't peak Candace Parker at this point. She is past her prime. But if you're in an elimination game, you're taking a former MVP who's still got a lot of skills and not playing them, you're doing something wrong, man.
You put one of the best players in WNBA history on the floor when you need.
Yeah,
that's what you
elimination
do
game
when the season is on the line.
Yeah,
but I'm just getting mad. We can get back to the NBA. I'm just getting really upset, even reliving. So we can get back.
we'll go back to stuff. I guess my next question was: you mentioned Curry. I feel like on one level he could totally have another. He's going to have the ball in his hands more. Obviously, Clay's not there. He could go back to an MVP level season. If he, I don't even wants to, is the word. Is he going to have that energy again? Does he have that? Can he sustain that level of energy and play for 80 something games again? Or is this something where, again, he's going to kind of pick and choose his spots a little more?
I think if the Warriors, if all goes right, he'll win MVP this year because he's going to play 78 games. He's going to have, if all goes right, he will have to play 78 games to 80 games. And he'll obviously have really big scoring board in on him. They'll need him to be at that MVP level. So if they win 48 games, he will be in that MVP conversation. And I think that if he has to stay healthy though, I think he's missed like 44 games over the last 2 years. He has not been healthy. And there was a lot of stretches where Kevin Durant has had to carry the team. I mean, he's one of the best players of all time, but Kevin has had to carry over stretches when Steph has been injured. And it was the groin last year. It was the ankle the year before. He has to stay on the floor, and so does Draymond. So if Steph plays 82 games, that means he is going to be among the leaders in the MVP conversation because he has to
be. Yeah. By the way, just as quick aside, the Durant thing, there are so many people who seem to want to make Durant's exit from the Warriors confrontational and about bad blood, where I don't really ever get the vibe from him or being around the team that was the case. Like, it was time to move on. He wanted to move on, but it wasn't out of anger. It wasn't out of frustration. It was him looking for a new challenge and looking for validation in a different way, in a different place. But I don't, you know, and I think Kerr said it, like, you know, are you mad about Durant's comments? He's like, no, of course we played more isolation ball in the conference finals and finals because the defenses are better and they shut you down.
Yeah, definitely. I think that Kerr was spot on in what his assessment is. I mean, you kind of saw that motion offense, as great as it was, I think that you saw the biggest flaw of that motion offense in the in Game 7 of the 2016 Finals, when no one is scoring and you need a guy that can create his own shot. And who had the guy that created his own shot? It was Kyrie Irving. And I think the Warriors more than recognized they needed a guy to just get a bucket for you. And that was the Kevin Durant. And I mean, Kerr knows this full well. He played in the triangle offense, but we know in the fourth quarter that triangle offense went out the window when Michael Jordan had the ball in his hand and they needed a bucket, or when Kobe needed a bucket, then you forget the triangle offense, it's ISO, or it's just been for decades. You can go back without the triangle offense. Give Kareem Abdul-Jabbar the ball. Give Magic Johnson the ball. Give Shaq the ball. You know, just give these guys the ball, and we need a bucket. I think that's just what it is. So Kevin is just one of those guys who, just give me a bucket. You need a bucket, just give me the ball. And he was a perfect marriage in that way, where, you know, especially in this postseason, when the offense wasn't good, Kevin was like, all right, I'll give you a light 50. I'll give the Clippers a light 50 and we can win this series, you know? So I think that Kevin was right. And, you know, Steve kind of acknowledged it. Yeah, it's right. We need great players to win championships, and we need great players to get buckets when we need to.
I don't think that there's some animosity there. I know he had a thing with Draymond Green, but again, everything I had heard, everything everybody reported, yourself, I think included, is that they got over that pretty quickly. Like, that really wasn't that lingering a thing. They, you know,
look. Yeah, I think the biggest thing, though, with Draymond is, and he told me this after, I think I wrote this after they went to the conference finals, where, you know, you don't get good with, you don't, he's one of, Draymond is one of those guys, you don't get good with him until he yells at you, or until you guys have an almost falling out, because he needs to. It's just the type of person he is. He needs to get whatever is his mind and off his chest. He needs to get it off his chest. And that is a confrontational style. And but if you talk about the guys that he's been with and has rode with him, I think Kobe's in a similar vein, where if you can get over just and not take it personal, his yelling or his need to, get his point across, then I think you guys will be, you'll be fine with Draymond. That's just the type of guy that he is. And I think Kevin just got to a point with Kevin where, you know, it was a confrontation. He said what he needed to say, and they moved on from that. And I think that they're cool now. I think that they are in a better place now. And I don't think there's really any harm.
No, by the way, talking about Draymond, I think that he becomes a key to this season in the sense that they again need him to be, and we talked about this briefly, like, they need him to get back to being not just the defensive, you know, force that he can be. He's got to be that secondary playmaker again, right? Like, he's got to be the shot creator. I mean, they're going to have D'Angelo Russell. Yeah. They've got, we'll get to him in a sec. They've got Steph Curry. But what's always made this team dangerous is, you know, that half role play where Draymond gets the ball and just always seems to make the right decision. He's just such a smart player. They need that guy, and they need him for 82, not, you know, 60.
Yeah, they also need him to they need him to make an occasional three at the top of the key, something that he hasn't done consistently in a few years. I think that he needs to do that to make them honest, because there was a lot of times where he would get the ball at the top of the key and people would just clamp up in the paint, and they would just, it was like they were playing 5-on-4. And I think that he needs to get back to making that three, similar to when he was with when Luke Walton was coaching during the 73 win season. He was making, he was hitting buckets. He was maybe in the mid 30s as in terms of 3-point and 3-point shooting, but he needs to get back to that where he can hit a three and keep the defense honest. Maybe not score maybe 15 to 17 points a night, but at least get to 10 and play, you know, lights out defense. So if he can be that, and I think that, you know, the Warriors can be fine. He needs to do that and be healthy.
Yeah. I think that's actually a really good point. The teams were letting him have that shot last year, and he's got to make them pay a little bit. So Kevin Durant goes east. I love the move the Warriors made, even if it cost them Iguodala, to get something back in that. They get an all-star in D'Angelo Russell. I'm a believer in that that's a good move because one way or another, you're going to need a guy like that. Like you, whether you trade him to get assets that fit, or assets, players that fit better, or you keep him, you needed to do something like that. I'm trying really hard not to use the word assets for players anymore because it's just kind of demeaning, but I keep stumbling. Yeah. But whether you're getting picks or players or whatever back, but just from what I heard and just talking to people, they're giving this a legitimate shot. They think this could work, and they're giving it a real run this year with D'Angelo Russell to see if he and Curry and eventually Thompson can form some sort of a trio of guards that would be very difficult to stop.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a trio in the league that compares to Klay Thompson, Steph, and D'Angelo Russell. I mean, it just is what it is. I mean, they're going to spread the floor. They're going to be really hard to contain offensively. The biggest thing is how they're going to be defensively. I know that Steph's been much maligned about his defense. I don't think it's that bad. I think that he's above average defender. But I'm curious to see these guys, these three guys can average 80 points a game combined. I mean, we know that. But I'm curious to see how they mesh and how they do things. I think the motion offense will be great, and they will have it can be successful for a time. But I do know while the Warriors are, looking for this season with D'Angelo and looking to keep him, I mean, down the line, they do want a big piece. And, I'm sure you know Joe Lacob wants a superstar guy. And, whether that be a Giannis Antetokounmpo or a Karl Anthony Towns, they want a guy, and they want one of those types of guys to bring to the Bay. So, I know that they are all in on this experiment with D'Angelo, but we'll see what happens in the years to come.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they try to go about that. I mean, look, the whole league is watching the Giannis thing this year, and. Most people I've talked to, and I've written this a couple of times, most people expect him to re-sign. Like, not only are the Bucks really good and contenders, but people kind of forget Milwaukee's his hometown here. I mean, it's where he was drafted. It's really the only city he's lived in. It's the only city he's lived in with his family kind of in a safe situation, because when they were in Athens, they were a poor immigrant family that had to move a lot. It wasn't a really comfortable situation. That's a lot to leave. Now, that said, we've seen the NBA, and I'm not about to make a bet that he's no way he's leaving. I just think it's less likely. But as you mentioned, there are other guys coming up, and Towns is an interesting. Yes, he's under contract, but how long before he's incredibly frustrated? And there's other guys coming up, obviously, through the ranks. Yeah. So there are always other superstars. There are always guys. Player movement has started to make this league kind of what it is, and owners can get frustrated about it, but it is what it is now. And they're going to have the money with this new Chase Center to go chase some of these guys. Yeah. Man. They're going to have the cash.
Yeah. And it's weird to just think that the Warriors are a player in free agency now, right?
Yeah.
Even growing up watching this franchise, like the fact that, I know it started with Dwight maybe almost 10 years ago, but with Dwight Howard, but just to see that this is a destination, with Silicon Valley, with the Bay Area and its resources, that, it was always a kind of a sleeping giant, but now that it's out in the open, that players, want to come here. And even the fact that the Warriors could get a Kevin Durant, and now that they could, maybe in the running, maybe to get Giannis in the future, or a Towns or another big name, is pretty, it's pretty crazy to watch.
Yeah, well, I've said this before too. If it weren't for Donald Sterling setting the bar at a unobtainable level for other human beings, Cone would have been like the worst owner in the NBA. He was, it was just bad ownership there for a long time, man. And look, you win from the top down still in the league, man. You might have brief blips of success, but if you don't have good ownership, you just don't win.
Right. And I think they're proven. I mean, the Warriors now have one of the best ownership groups and not in the league of sports. So it's going to be interesting to see how they, you know, go forward.
How do they plan to use D'Angelo Russell? Is it going to be more ball in his hands trading off with Curry, or is this going to be a work in progress to see what fits and what doesn't?
I think it's going to be a work in progress. I think it's going to be a work in progress for this whole team because it's so new. You know, like I said, they have 8 new guys. I think that it's going to be pretty new. I think that also starting the season, I think that they're going to do better than expectations to start the season. But I do think that there's going to be a real adjustment process. Who has the ball in their hands? Who, you know, does Curry play off the ball with D'Angelo Russell? Does, you know, D'Angelo Russell play off the ball? Like, how does that going to work? So it's going to be interesting to see. And, you know, we'll get a good idea, you know, in the first couple months of the year.
Yeah. Beyond those guys, it starts to get really interesting. You mentioned Willie Cauley-Stein earlier. To me, Kevin Looney is going to be a key piece for them, right? Like, or Kevon Looney is going to just be a key piece for them in the sense that he simply got to be, and you could see it in the playoffs last year, how much better they were with him at the five. With all due respect to DeMarcus, like the whole offense just worked better when he was at the five. Right. They need that from him. They need him to be that guy. I almost picture him starting and Cauley-Stein coming off the bench, but you know, we'll see how that works.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they might start off with Cauley-Stein first, just for the simple fact that they like Looney coming off the bench. They like him to kind of, he's one of those stabilizing guys that knows what to do and a lot of different things. I'm curious to see out in the Bay. They're talking about, you know, Kevon shooting more and shooting corner threes and really getting, you know, really advancing his offensive game. But you got to remember, Kevon used to be a point guard in high school at Hamilton High in Milwaukee. He used to be averaging 28-9-9 as a point guard, as a 6'9 guard. So he has it in him. I know there was a lot of he had a couple hip surgeries and was struggling to stay healthy, but no, he can, you know, be a piece for them offensively, if allowed. And I know we haven't seen much of that. He's been really heralded for his defense, but you know, we could see a big year out of Kevon. Yeah.
What are they going to do with the three? Is it it's Alphonso McKinney and then Alec Burks? I mean, Burks is an interesting roll of the dice by them because he's certainly got potential, but he's never quite seemed to live up to it.
Yeah, I mean, he's dealt with some injuries. Yeah. That's going to be a battle at that three position. And it's crazy to see that because, you know, the Warriors had probably, you know, at least a top five, if not the best, you know, best at that position with Andre and, you know, Kevin Durant, probably the best player in the league last year. But that's going to be interesting. You know, I don't know who they start. I know that at going into training camp, Alphonso probably has an advantage just because he's been in the system. He knows what to do. And, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But I think going into camp, I think Alphonso has a bit of an advantage.
Is depth a concern with this team?
Definitely, especially in the front court. Talk about Cauley-Stein, who has all the attributes to be a really great defender, but hasn't really lived up to that. He looks like he could be a rim protector. He looks like he can do all these things, but he has struggled with consistency. I know he doesn't agree with that label, but the numbers just speak for themselves. And I think that he is someone that's going to have a lot to prove, but outside of him, you're going to have Kevon Looney and, you know, who else is going to play in that front court? That's something that's going to be really, you know, that's going to be really interesting thing to look out for. So I think that their depth is going to be a thing, but there's a lot of redemption stories on this team. There's a lot. You talk about Willie Cauley-Stein, Amari Spellman, Alec Burke, Glenn Robinson III. There's going to be a lot of guys with a lot of things to prove. So they're going to have to figure that out, and it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, and when we talked about culture earlier, that's one of those things where, look, guys go to the Spurs, they get better. Guys go to, I don't know, the Patriots outside of Antonio Brown. Guys go to the Patriots and get, but I mean, they get better, right? Like they put them in situations. And I think that's, like you said, that's a test for Kerr and the staff this year to give, are all four of these guys going to shine? Probably not, but can you get one or two of them to kind of really contribute? That becomes huge, especially the first half of the year where you're battling without Clay until he, if they really haven't given a timeline on Clay Thompson's return, right? Like,
no, I think the general understanding is after All-Star break. I think that's around March. Is I think is when they like, you know, they would want to have him back. I think that's when he wants to come back or he think he'll be ready. But that's a lot of the chunk of the season that they're going to have without him. Yeah. I mean, I think that if you had Clay on the roster healthy going into this season, the Warriors, no question, win 50 plus games, I think. And but now, you know, you're going to have to, you know, deal with him, and it's the margin of error is going to be way less now. You know, so that's something they're going to have to figure out. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think their guard play is fine right now. I think the biggest thing they have to figure out in the front court defensively, you know, I think offense they'll be fine, but defense they have to figure a lot of things out.
And it's a challenge, both making the playoffs and just do all that in the West where there just aren't going to be nights off. I mean, this is a loaded conference right now with, I mean, you know, we talk about the two teams in LA and I'm down here and obviously we'll be writing a lot about them and everybody will be following them. I'm predicting Utah and Denver to probably finish 1-2, like in the regular season standings. Now, do they have the superstars we were talking about earlier, the guys you need to win when it gets down to the conference finals and finals? That's another discussion. But regular season, man, those teams are going to tear it up. And, you know, Houston, I'm not sure how they're going to defend. We've got questions about them, but they're going to put up points. Like Portland's still there. Every night there's going to be tough games in this conference.
Definitely. And I think that the thing is, I mean, they're going to have to, it's the first time in a while the Warriors aren't a shoe-in to just win the whole thing pretty much. It's been the first time in 5 or 6 years. And I think that, it's going to be interesting. I'm not as sold on Houston as a lot of people are. I think that they're kind of on the outside. I don't think they're a top four team in the West, but they're still going to have to, you're going to have to battle. And Utah is never an easy game, especially in Utah. Even before they got Mike Conley, they were always a hard team to play. And one thing I'm curious about is Denver. And, you know, if Andre gets traded there or something like that, I think that that would be a great team. I think the only thing that's keeping them is their youth, but they're a really good team. And then I'm curious to see how they play and they build off of last season.
Andre's an interesting situation, by the way. For people who don't know, they came to an agreement this week with Memphis. He's not going to show up to media day. He's basically not going to be around the team. He's just going to work out on his own because Memphis wants to trade him. They don't want to get nothing for him. They don't want to just buy him out. They want to trade him. So he's going to be away from the team. And I'm with you. I think somebody at some point at Denver might be the kind of team or, you know, that wants a veteran in the locker room and a good guy off the bench, but somebody who can help them through those moments who might say, hey, we could use this guy. Maybe somebody in the East jumps up into that realm too, but it's going to be interesting to see what team steps forward and offers Memphis to, you know, who's obviously a rebuilding team now and how, look, I like their young pieces. Talk about a team that's going to be fun to watch this year with Ja Morant and I'm always high on Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, I think they've got some potential, but they're looking for guys on those timelines now.
Yeah. I think that, you know, Andre is going to probably push for a trade as well, just because Andre is all about business and one of his mottos is always get as much money as you can from these teams. And so I think that if he's going to want to get his full salary, but I do think that Denver's a great possibility for him. I think the Western Conference would hate for this to happen. If he goes to the Clippers, if Andre ends up on the Clippers and you talk about pairing him with Kawhi Leonard, Paul George and Patrick Beverley. I don't know how you score on that, you know, on those four guys. And I think that'd be a game changer if he ends up in with the Clippers. Yeah. So, I think that I think that he'll, I think that he's going to push for a trade. And I think that if he comes back to the Western Conference, good luck for any team that he goes to.
Yeah. The Clippers are interesting. If they can get the starting five set up so that they're still bringing Trez and Lou Williams off the bench every night, man, that becomes tough. Yeah. They become a really, really dangerous team, and they're set up well for the playoffs, obviously, with two long athletic wing defenders, if they're healthy. And of course, there's a bunch of other concerns with that team. That's, I think, one of the fun things about this season, right? Like, it's not just that the balance of power isn't, you know, focused in Golden State. So you feel like, all right, if somebody's, you know, in the conversation isn't, can Team X beat the Warriors? It's every one of these teams, Lakers, Clippers, Sixers, Bucks, everybody's got question marks, right? The Bucks lose Brogdon, and you're like, well, how does that affect them? And can they take the next step forward? And there's plenty of Budenholzer critics out there, not in my household, because my wife went to college with him, and so bad words may not be spoken about Mike Budenholzer. Yeah. But in general, like, I think there's just, it's a really fascinating season because for the first time in a long time, I don't really know how it's going to play out. Or I don't have an idea what the script is going to look like as much.
Yeah, it's, I mean, just a question mark. You talk about the Clippers. I mean, they're probably I think they're the best team in the league, but can they stay healthy? Paul George is probably not going to start the season there. And we all know about Kawhi Leonard. And then you talk about the Lakers. How much does Bron have in the tank? You know what I mean? You talk about, you know, even Utah and the Nuggets, the biggest question with them, are they ready? Are they ready to make that next step? And then you talk about all the question marks back east. Are the Sixers ready to make a finals push? So it's going to be a really interesting year. Are the Warriors as bad as people are saying they are? Are they even going to make the playoffs, right?
Yeah, I think they will. I think they make the playoffs. I think they will. Although you mentioned it earlier, just the margin for error isn't that big. I mean, in theory, with Luke Walton there now, the Kings should be a little better. And in theory, Phoenix should be better, although, you know, well, heck, they got a point guard now. But Sarver will find a way to screw that up. Don't worry. But we'll see what happens. All these teams should be better. The West should be a lot tougher. And that margin for error, whether it's due to injury or whatever, is just really slim. So that's what makes the Warriors so fascinating this year. They go into the new building with a lot of question marks. But I'm one of those people who's just like, they've built it up enough trust in me that I see them as a playoff team. And the kind of playoff team, if they get Clay back in March, suddenly they're the playoff team you don't want, right? Like, that says you're suddenly like, man, Draymond's playing all over the place. They got three guys who can light it up. That is suddenly they're the five seed, and you'd like, I don't want to be the four seed. I don't want those guys.
Right. I think if everything goes well, I think the Warriors will be the most dangerous team going into the playoffs. Yeah. They win 48 games. And Clay comes back and they're on all cylinders, and say they win 12, you know, 12 of their last 15 going into the playoffs. I don't think you want to face them because they are a real threat, and I would not be surprised if they're hitting at all cylinders if they go to the Western Conference Finals. But that's if everything goes perfect.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? As if everything, literally everything goes the way they need it to. And so we'll see what happens, but the Warriors, listen, the Warriors, if they get Clay back and they're on all cylinders, watch out.
No, it's going to be really interesting to see how these teams line up heading into the playoffs. And that means we got a lot of time between now and then. It's going to be interesting. Is there anybody else they're talking about in camp? Anybody sneaky, you know, Jordan Poole or somebody sneaking in where you're like, watch this guy, he's playing. You always hear that, he's in the best shape of his life, he's playing great. And we all take this with a grain of salt. But who are they talking about?
Eric Pascal,
really?
Their second round pick. He is probably the most there. I'm hearing things that he might be the most NBA ready guy right now. And I know a lot of people have gotten the next Draymond label, you know, especially when you talk about Jordan Bell and, you know,
Long Beach. Hey, Pascal, stop briefly. Long Beach Poly's own Jordan Bell. We always got
to go to Long Beach Poly.
Yeah, he did. Got to shout out Long Beach Poly every chance we get.
No, did you go to Long Beach Poly?
No, I moved to Long Beach and covered Long Beach for a long time, including sports down here. So I saw him in high school.
I respect Long Beach Poly. Jordan is a great dude. I think that I have a bit of a bad take. I have a bit of a beef with Long Beach Poly because I went to Berkeley High in Northern California, and they would always beat us. So I got a little beef with them, but. Love Long Beach. I love Long Beach. You know, shout out. I don't know if you, Mike, Mike G and I go way back.
We're very tight. Yeah. And
okay, cool.
562.org now. He's doing it privately. If you're listening and you live in Long Beach, man, you're not going to get better coverage of sports in the area, man. He's just
looking forward to his book.
Long Beach Poly book. Actually, it's out. It's just coming out. You could pre-order it. I think it hits the shelves. I know he just got it the other day. So yeah, I saw him at a Long Beach State soccer game about a week ago.
I don't know if he's listening, but I need my book, man. I bought it. I need to send it up. I already bought it.
I'll text him when I get off of here. I'll tell him, man, go find Logan Murdoch. Get him his book. Yeah, it's for people that don't know, he wrote a history of the Long Beach poly sports scene, which goes back includes Tony Gwynn and all these, just obviously they've got, I think they still have like 6 or 7 guys in the NFL this year.
It's Juju Smith.
Juju Smith is still there. And I'm suddenly going blank on who was the defensive – the Patriots' big defender who went to poly forever.
Willie McGinnis.
Great. It's weird because my daughter went to the same middle school as his kid. And so, you know, you go to pick up and all the kids are coming out. His kid's a good sized. She's just going to be a tall, very athletic lady because of the genes. All the dads are standing around and then Willie McGinnis comes up and we're like, we are not big humans. I do think that
shout out Long Beach, Eric Pascal could be one of those guys. I don't know. Eric Pascal could be one of those guys. I think that, he is probably the most complete rookie they have right now. Probably Jordan Poole has the highest ceiling, but I think that, Eric Pascal is going to open some eyes this season.
Well, it's something to watch. It's going to be like I said, the West is going to be fascinating, and we will have you back on over the course of the season when you have time to talk about the West and the Warriors and how things are going. And I'll see you either when I'm up there or you're down here.
We'll be in LA. I'll see you in LA next a couple months.
Yeah, I could say you guys are down here a little bit early. The Lakers and Clippers both have kind of front-loaded home schedules, which they probably like a lot. But yeah, they're both home a lot early, probably because Grammys and everybody kick them out late, so they got to travel a little more back half. But I look forward to seeing you around, man. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll be back with we're already doing previews of teams and talking about awards and all that stuff up through the start of the NBA season. So keep checking out the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports, and of course, subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, whatever you're using, we're there. So thanks again for listening, and we'll be back soon with another Pro Basketball Talk podcast from NBC Sports.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.